Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Salt Lake City's budgeting process for next year is expected to be much smoother than in years past, with revenues up instead of down, bolstered by an estimated $1 million in sales taxes from the newly opened City Creek Center. But Mayor Ralph Becker says the city is still $11.5 million behind on its projects. He'll join us in the studio to discuss his new budget plan, the news that outdoor retailer may leave Salt Lake City, and take your questions. Then State Senator Todd Weiler of Davis County has only been in the legislature a few months, but already passed bills dealing with fathers' rights and other issues. The former Utah Republican Party vice chair enjoys posting his frequently snarky observations about Utah politics on Twitter. He'll join us as he runs for election. Politics Up Close is coming up right after the news here on KCBW. Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Budget time approaches for Salt Lake City, but this year is expected to be a less painful exercise as city revenues are expected to go up instead of decline like in recent years, especially with an estimated $1 million in sales tax revenues from City Creek. Still, Mayor Ralph Becker says there are a lot of projects to catch up on. He joins me now in the studio to discuss his new budget plan, along with the latest on the controversial Ski Link proposal, which now has the backing of several local business leaders, and the possibility of the outdoor retailer semi-annual trade show moving out of Salt Lake City. Mayor, it's good to have you on the show, as always.
Thank you, Jeff. Likewise.
Listeners, now is your time to talk to the mayor this morning. Join us on the air with your questions and comments at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. So, Mayor, how much more money exactly is the city going to bring in next year, according to the estimates?
Well, it looks like we are seeing, for the first time since I've been in office, a projection that next year we will have a slight increase. It's a few million dollars more in revenues than we've had in the last, and that's out of an $800 million budget, so it's a pretty small increase. But still, it's welcome. After what we've been through, where we've had to lay off employees, we've asked employees to do a lot more with less. We've asked them to assume more of their health care costs. We've asked them to take furloughs and reductions in pay. It's nice to be in a position where we can keep our employees who have performed so well under trying circumstances here. That we can say, look, we're not going to ding you again. We're hoping to give you a slight increase in your salaries.
So what accounts for these higher revenues? Is it sales taxes, property taxes, the economy just doing better overall?
It's really mostly in the sales tax area. I think a lot of it can be attributed to a projected bump in our sales tax revenues from the opening of City Creek and the many other businesses that have been opening up downtown. But just to put it in perspective a little bit, the way sales tax distribution works under state law is that the vast majority of that money actually goes to state government, and then a portion goes to local government, and there's a split among local governments so that point of sale, so people acquiring things, for example, at City Creek or other stores downtown, half of those revenues actually get distributed around the rest of the county. And while that's fine, and we all want to benefit from whatever the improvements are in the economy, where our city doubles in its daytime population with the influx of commuters and people going to going to school here, we have additional responsibilities that come with being the capital city. We have the second highest increase in daytime population percentage-wise in the country. So that's not reflected in the way the revenues are distributed among local governments, and we certainly feel there's a need for that to be acknowledged and addressed in the legislature.
So tell me a bit more about what you're hoping to do with these increased revenues in your latest budget.
Well, the first thing I've already mentioned, which is to provide a slight increase to our city employees. Last year, we started a restructuring program of the way our compensation works with our city employees to have compensation based on performance. There was, for the newer employees in city government, kind of almost an anticipated, at least expected, automatic increase. And after looking at that and saying, you know, when we're in an economic downturn, people can't expect an increase. We really need to restructure it, and took a close look at it and said people should be paid based on performance. And they're improving their skills and capability and how they're serving our community and taxpayers. And so we restructured that, and that means that we're proposing an across-the-board very small increase, but for some employees it'll be larger who have suffered particularly in terms of what their expectations were coming into employment with the city. For some employees, the newer employees they're going to be getting, and usually younger employees they're going to be getting more of an increase. But that's the biggest increase in terms of areas. We've also very strategically looked at places where we can see opportunities for improvements in what we can offer to our community, and there's a long, detailed list there, so I won't start on it.
Well, there are some things that in recent years the city has had to scale back on, the so-called, you know, nice-to-have things like park maintenance and flowers and that sort of thing. Are you going to be able to pick that sort of thing back up in this budget?
Yeah, we are restoring almost everything we've seen in the past where we've been cutting back. You know, we were cutting back on planting flowers in some of our parks. Our street lighting program, or actually last year had approved, but the implementation's been delayed. Hopefully this next year will be put in place, a change in our street lighting so that we can not only maintain our streetlights well, but there's a more secured source of funding, so it's not subject to our general fund ups and downs in the economy. And we can improve the energy efficiency of our lighting. So, yeah, there are a number of areas where we're obtaining some good stability going forward. And then, as you mentioned in your opening statement, there are areas where we've, in an effort to try to balance our budgets, we've cut back. So, for example, in our fleets, you know, we have city vehicles and trucks and specialized vehicles for street sweeping and trash collection and other things. We've cut back on what would be our normal replacement cycle. And while that's helped us with our costs on a year-to-year basis, over time that means that our maintenance cost goes up. So we're going to try to move towards moving back towards a more normal replacement cycle for our vehicles so that it's more cost efficient for the city in terms of our ownership of the vehicles that we need to do the city's business. So there's actually an increase there in our replacement commitment for our vehicles. And, of course, we've been moving towards alternative fuel vehicles and much more fuel-efficient vehicles. But one of the uncontrolled costs for us is fuel costs have gone up dramatically, as they have for you and me. And that has obviously a big impact when you've got a fleet of a few thousand vehicles.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. Join us on the air with your questions and comments for the mayor this morning at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. We welcome your questions and comments. So you mentioned this week, Mayor, the city is $11.5 million behind in capital projects because of the recession. What does this mean exactly, and how soon can you catch up?
Well, I'm not sure how much of it we can attribute to the recession, but one of the things we've done is to keep up, and in fact, in some cases, quicken the pace for some of the construction projects that we know we need to do for our infrastructure. For like water and sewer, we decided, look, this is such a good time to be doing construction with construction costs low and interest rates being so low. Let's get those projects that are on our 10-year plan moving more quickly. And so we actually infused more money into capital projects there. We also did that in some other areas. But what we have found is that we have not been keeping up with the construction schedule we've actually been budgeting. So part of my budget proposal to the council this year is that we catch up on what is now an accumulated $11.5 million of backlog in construction projects that have been appropriated and we haven't completed the construction, and that it gives us in a way some more room for projects that otherwise would have been scheduled for this year. We'll keep up with design and engineering for projects, but catch up very selectively, delaying some projects, and then that we take a very close look at how that function works in city government. We did this last year with our refuse and recycling program. We actually put the whole program out for bid and compared it to what it costs us in the city to perform those operations. One of those was actually had been privatized earlier, part of a recycling program. After looking at all of the bids, we found that over a contract term of about 5 years, the city actually saves millions of dollars by doing that in-house. Mm-hmm. That's, in a way, a good approach for us to take in looking at a number of our city services where there is private sector work that is done. Are we operating as efficiently and as timely as we should be? What can we do internally, and can others outside perform these services more efficiently and cost effectively for us? So we're proposing to the council we go through that exercise this next year as we're kind of adapting to the capital projects that have been backlogged for a while.
Switching topics this morning, Mayor Becker, the Outdoor Industry Association announced this week that it's starting a serious conversation about moving the semi-annual outdoor retailer trade show away from the Salt Palace and from Salt Lake City because the venue simply is not big enough for them anymore. Now they're contracted to go through the summer of 2014, we should note. They've been here since 96. Now, the association notes that in the past few years, several exhibitors haven't even been able to fit inside the building. And in addition, there's simply not enough hotel space or even taxi service downtown. So a lot of factors they're talking about here. What was your reaction to this news?
Well, it's something actually I've known about for some time. And residents here may recall this is not a new issue. It's come up before as the outdoor retailer show has expanded. It's by far our biggest a meeting of its kind, a collection of folks our time. We love having the outdoor retailers in town. It's a great experience financially. It's tens of millions of dollars to this community and across the state in revenue. It's also a great exposure for an outdoor recreation-oriented state and city as we are to be associated with. And we have had businesses move here who love Salt Lake City after coming here and experiencing what we have as a city. So there are enormous benefits for us. This conversation for me started really about a year ago. It may have even been longer with the outdoor retailers. They are a growing industry. Right through the recession, they've been growing just about double-digit numbers. They need more space to show the variety of equipment and opportunities that people have for outdoor equipment. Last year, we did a temporary effort with some tents.
Right.
Going forward, they need to know how secure we are in providing for their needs, and it's something we've been working on. The state has been working with us, as well as Salt Lake County, which handles the convention center and Salt Palace facilities and exhibit space there. We're working with them on a proposal. We want them here. And I can tell you from my side as Salt Lake City mayor, I've been heavily involved, as have our economic development folks, in working with the other players to make sure we're providing them, hopefully, with what they need. We'd hate to see them leave. The other alternatives of looking at Las Vegas or going to Denver or some other place, we don't think serves them as well as we can because of our access that they like to have to the outdoor recreational experiences they can have here to show their products. But we take it very seriously. We're working hard on trying to keep them here. I hope that the county and the state with us continue to partner on giving them the best option. I should tell you as well that the convention hotel plays into this. People have differing views on the convention hotel, but with a convention hotel, it provides a lot of potential meeting space and even exhibit space that could be associated with a major event like the Outdoor Retailer Show. And whether it's through the convention hotel or some interim space through tents, which we hope we can provide, we're going to need to do some things to accommodate that show if they're going to continue.
Now, if it expires in summer of 2014, you'd have to get moving pretty quick on this convention center hotel in order, to convince them that it's going to happen and that it's feasible for them to stay here. So is there a possibility that could happen this quickly?
Well, certainly not having a design construction of a convention hotel, but There are temporary space options, as you mentioned, and I talked about. There have been tents, large tents that have been provided that can provide some temporary exhibit space. But I think what they're looking for is long-term and a commitment long-term from the city and the county and the state that we're going to be able to provide for them, which tent space may not work over a decade or so. And so I think the decision time frame for a convention hotel certainly can play into the timing for a decision, for the 2014 ultimatum.
Do you think there are political concerns behind outdoor retailer moving away? Certainly the president of the association has said that he feels Governor Herbert's outdoors and environmental policies are hardly welcoming to the industry, and that could potentially be a factor. Does that trouble you?
Well, there's no question there's been some frustration that I've heard very directly from the outdoor retailers themselves. They rely, for example, on the public lands as a place where this multi-billion dollar enterprise takes place in Utah. And when they hear the attacks on their uses of the public lands as something that is part of a political dialogue, it does cause them great concern. And they've weighed in before. They've been weighing in now. And I think they've been having some more recent conversations that I think have been a little more positive than they felt has been true in the past with Governor Herbert. But, that's obviously a factor. I don't know that it's the primary factor. I think they like being here. They like the space and the opportunities they have here. I can tell you from going around the show and talking to those manufacturers who are here and the retailers, they love coming to Salt Lake. It's an hospitable place. They love the access to the outdoors. They like the friendly environment that they have here. And the folks who I talk to, they don't really want to leave. It's a question of whether or not we can provide for them. Many of them have been frustrated by some of the politics of Utah, I understand that well, and I think a lot of us do. But they are an important voice, and we need to make sure that we're listening well and responding well to their very legitimate interests as it relates to the public lands and to recreational needs of the wide range of both the motorized and non-motorized recreational user, and they're in the non-motorized camp.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. We're going to take a short break and be right back. This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson, speaking with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, who joins us for his monthly visit. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Mayor, you recently got back from a trip to Hamburg, Germany, paid for by the National League of Cities. What was that visit for?
Well, just for clarification, the National League of Cities, I think, sponsored and put together the trip. It was actually paid for by the State Department, as I understand it. And there were a number of cities, and I'm pleased that Salt Lake City was one of them, that were asked to go and meet with officials in Germany and in Hamburg to discuss some of our sustainability and livability practices that we have going on, and then to have an exchange and learn what's going on in Hamburg and in Germany. And it was very impressive for me to see what they're doing in Hamburg. European cities are obviously different than our cities in the U.S. in a number of ways. But what particularly caught my attention is what Germany and Hamburg are doing in transforming their energy system. They have gone from, in a period of about 10 or 15 years, to literally having a few percent of their energy based on renewable energy. They had set a goal to get to 20%, which is ambitious, by 2015. Mm-hmm. They're now well over 20% and moving almost in an exponential way towards changing their energy portfolio to rely much more on renewables, on wind in a very large extent, and in solar in an increasing array. And this is in a city that has 200 days of rain a year. So it was very impressive to see what they're doing, their commitment, and how successful they have in making that transformation, particularly at a time when Germany made the decision after the Japanese nuclear disaster that they were going to eliminate nuclear from their energy portfolio. And people were saying, you can't do it, and they are doing that at the same time. So it was very impressive, and it's had an enormous positive effect on their economy. They were saying they've created over 20,000 jobs in the last 5 years in the renewable energy industry, and they have become the focal point internationally for the wind energy industry by deciding to make this this conversion to renewable. So it was impressive. I learned a lot. It was interesting on a very local level, too, to see some of the things they're doing with their buildings, with solar energy in particular, and how they're moving really towards, in some places, net zero communities within and neighborhoods within their city.
So, Mayor, last time on the show, we talked about the Ski Link project, the controversial plan to link the canyons and solitude resorts via gondola, a project you have opposed not only because of its potential impact, but the way that it's moving through Congress right now. The latest news is that this week the Salt Lake Chamber and several local business leaders launched a group called the Lift Utah Coalition, declaring their support for Ski Link, saying it's actually going to improve transportation, will improve the environment, and will go through a rigorous review process, so there's nothing to worry about. Were you surprised by this announcement?
Well, I was a bit surprised, only I guess because I didn't know until I saw an item in the media that that they were having the announcement. I was, I'd say, a bit relieved after our conversations and seeing the nature of what that announcement actually was. The folks who came together, and I'll use Lane Beatty with the Chamber of Commerce and the Chamber of Commerce's statement on this, was that they think it is of great value to us to connect our ski resorts, both in Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons and with those on the Summit County Park City side, and we agree with that. I can tell you from Salt Lake City, the concept of having our ski resorts connected obviously offers great economic benefit, and if it's done well, can offer some great transportation solutions that we all have experienced to use our Wasatch Canyons here. And what I think what Lane Beatty said is important here, because the conditions that he put on the support to me were more important than him saying we like the idea of connecting the ski resorts and Ski Link potentially as part of that, because he said we could support Ski Link if there's a net environmental benefit here. Second, if there are local approvals and support for this. And, of course, right now Ski Link is opposed by Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, and many others across the valley. And if other options are looked at, and this proves to be the best solution. So when you put that in context, I think of an announcement that there was support for Ski Link and then the conditions that were put on that support, in my mind, today, Ski Link would not be anywhere close to something that the chamber could support until we do a lot more assessment and community involvement and look at other options and really consider fully the environmental impacts. And those things haven't been done yet. On top of that, when you consider there's federal legislation that would bypass all of the local decision-making, we feel comfortable that those who announced some support for getting something done couched it in a way that gave plenty of room for them and for us to move forward well together.
So are you convinced that the way this is moving forward right now, the local review process won't happen? Congressman Bishop says there will still be review, you know, on the local level, regardless of whether the legislation passes. So why do you say that that's wrong?
Well, because the congressional legislation would take Forest Service land, would sell this Forest Service land to a ski resort, and not just authorize it, would actually direct the sale of the Forest Service land, this public land that's being used for all kinds of other public uses, and would put in place a set of steps that would be pretty difficult for at least the Forest Service to reverse, and for Salt Lake City. Now, could we do it at the local level? Yeah, I think there actually are plenty of opportunities to do it. But to have the Forest Service told what to do in Washington, D.C. by congressional action, when the Forest Service locally and nationally opposes it. When we oppose it, the two primary local jurisdictions oppose it, Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County, to me is offensive and goes against the grain of some of the very things that are held in most high esteem by Representative Bishop and others who say we should have local decisions about these kinds of matters that have great effect on us locally and where we certainly have the capability locally, as we've proven for many decades, to make good, sound decisions about what should happen in the Wasatch Mountains.
So would you go as far as to say if Canyons wants any prayer of having your support on this project, they should withdraw the bill?
Well, I think just saying we're going to ignore local concerns and go to Congress to try to get done what we want done as one business and without even consulting before the legislation was introduced with us locally does not get us off on the right foot. And if we're going to be having a legitimate conversation about what the options are, which we are having today, for dealing with the transportation issues that we need to and want to address, for looking at the environmental effects, that needs to be the starting point, not an afterthought after Congress directs a solution.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. Join us on the air with your questions and comments for the mayor. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Mayor, as visitors to Library Square will notice, KCBW now has some new neighbors in the form of Occupy Salt Lake, which has more than a dozen tents set up just a few feet away. They've been good neighbors so far. What do you think of having Occupy Salt Lake right here in this new location?
Well, everything that I'm seeing and hearing in my discussions with the Occupy Salt Lake folks who have moved here and with you and others who work here on Library Square is that it is going smoothly. This is a very different situation than we faced over in Pioneer Park. It gives them a good place for their expression of petitioning the government and free speech and exercising their protest. And I think it seems to be going very smoothly. I know our police are there on a very regular basis just to make sure things are going okay. And I haven't heard any reports of any incidents. And we welcome the protest. We welcome the expression. And this seems to be a good location. I'm glad we finally seem to have worked something out that gives them the right to express themselves in a way that they legitimately want to and should be able to, and yet protects the public health and safety.
Do you have any concerns about, you know, the Utah Arts Festival coming up and, you know, events that use Library Square perhaps being interfered with, or is there an agreement to move them away temporarily for those, or what exactly?
Well, I'm not sure what agreements there are, but even when they were over in Pioneer Park and up at Gallivan, when we had special events where we needed that space, we made some temporary adjustments, and I would hope we could do that again, certainly as we get into the event season here on Library Square and Washington Square where the City and County Building is. We're going to need to work with them to try to make sure we accommodate those events and the rest of the public well.
Finally, Mayor, in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to get your thoughts on this year's political season here in Utah. The Democrats, your party, had an interesting county and state convention. One of your associates, Ben McAdams, winning the county mayor nomination and Scott Howell winning the U.S. Senate nomination for the Democrats. What do you think of their chances this election year and particularly how those could be affected by Mitt Romney being on the ballot?
Well, we had two great candidates for county mayor. I think with Ross Romero and Ben McAdams, I'm a bit partial for reasons everyone probably understands because I've worked so closely with Ben and gotten to know him and work with him so well over the years. And I think he will be a terrific county mayor if elected. So I'm happy with the outcome of that. And I think Ben will be a terrific candidate as well. As well as would become a great mayor if he's elected. Scott Howell, I worked with in the legislature during much of my time in the legislature and developed an enormous respect for him. He's a person of great principles and values, and he's articulate and an attractive candidate and served very well in the legislature as minority leader, I think, for the whole time when I was up there and he was there. he served as minority leader, and I think very highly of him. So we're going to have very strong Democratic candidates on the ballot this year. There was certainly an energy reflected at the conventions with Democrats that I've never seen. I mean, the number of people participating was probably double what I've seen before at Democratic conventions, and people seem to be energized. So I think we have some great candidates, and I just hope that the public will do what we all would hope would happen, is to take a look at the candidates and determine who will serve us best and make a decision based on that.
You
asked about the Romney factor, and you know, I think it, in a way it kind of frightens us as Democrats. We recognize Mitt Romney's popularity. He's almost a favorite son here in Utah for reasons we all understand, not the least of which was his successful work with the Salt Lake Olympics in 2002. And I don't have a sense for how much that's going to play out. I know we all have political opinions, those of us in this business, and I think you can take all of our opinions, and at the end of the day, some of us will feel like we called it right, and some of us will feel like we called it wrong, and that's the way it works.
Real quickly, do you see a centrist push by the Utah Democratic Party? I think most people would say in the mayor and Senate race it was the more centrist, moderate candidate that came out on top both times, but you know, you wear the progressive label yourself. Do you see the Democratic Party here in Utah pushing towards the center for this election?
Well, actually, I think the Democratic Party has represented the mainstream of Utah for quite some time. The labeling and the stereotyping that goes on, particularly from the Republican Party, about Democrats in Utah, I think is both inaccurate and is reflected when you look at positions of Democrat relative to where the polling says people are on issue after issue. But it's persisted for a long, long, long time now. And I don't really see any significant change this year from past years in Democrats in terms of who's being nominated. I think we have, Peter Cook as well as running for governor. We have incredibly strong candidates who represent Democratic values and Utah values and principles. And my hope is that we will see some people who will actually look at the candidates and not just push a button that is a label and how they stereotype folks. But that's difficult in this state for Democrats to overcome, and we've known that for a long time. I don't see that necessarily changing, but I'm ever hopeful.
We've been speaking with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker here on Politics Up Close. Mayor, it's good to have you.
Thank you. Always good to be with you, Jeff.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Politics Up Close here on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Former State Senator Dan Lilienquist's decision to leave the legislature to pursue a challenging run against Orrin Hatch proved to be a key opportunity for Todd Weiler's political career, as the former Utah Republican Party vice chair and Woods Cross resident was picked by GOP delegates to replace him. During his first session as a Utah lawmaker, he sponsored and passed a handful of bills, including one on fathers' rights. Now he's seeking election to his first full term representing the Davis County District in the Utah Senate. Weiler joins me now in the studio to discuss what he brings to the table. And, Todd, it's good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments for State Senator Todd Weiler. Our number is 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Well, Todd, how far back does your involvement in Utah politics go? How did you first get involved?
I went to my first precinct caucus in 1998. I was elected as a delegate, and I've been involved ever since.
And what attracted you to the Republican Party in particular? Are you a lifelong Republican?
I do consider myself a lifelong Republican, with one caveat. I remember when I was 9 years old in Illinois, pretending like I fell asleep on election night in 1976. I crawled out of bed, snuck down to the basement, shut the door, and watched the Jimmy Carter returns come in till about 2:30 a.m. So But then I went through puberty and matured and became a Republican. So.
Right. Okay. You spent a few years as vice chair of the Utah Republican Party recently, Todd, during an interesting time where the Tea Party was really starting to rise to prominence here in the state. What was that experience like for you?
You know, it was interesting. we've always had the far right of the party. The Republican Party in Utah, I believe, is a big tent. And in the first 10 years of my involvement, the far right kind of wavered between 10 and 20% of the party. And then we had 2010 when I think that surged to 40 to 50% of the party, and that created a lot of change.
And so is that something you don't identify with yourself? Do you not consider yourself part of the quote-unquote far right?
I don't. I consider myself a good conservative, a solid conservative, but I try to stay away from the extremist positions.
From what you observed, Todd, at the state Republican convention last weekend, do you think the Tea Party is losing influence in Utah? Certainly many observers, based on the results, would say that's the case.
No question. And I respect the Tea Party. I echo their sentiments about big government and spending money we don't have. No question they've lost control, and they've been losing control, really, for the past 2 years, I think, on a monthly basis.
Has your position, not being part of the, you know, the farthest right part of the Republican Party, has it made it difficult in the past couple of years when the Tea Party was more prominent to stay involved in the party for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was different. And I was one of the ones that always believed that this was a storm that would blow over. And I think I was right. But, Jeff, I want to tell you that whenever we have a populist movement like that, we always pick up new people. And there have been several people in the Tea Party who I think have gone through a political maturation process and have become very productive members of the Utah Republican Party and will be for years to come. And I welcome them.
What do you think of the current state of the GOP? A little bit of conflict going on right now. You have a vice chairman of the Utah Party who's actually sued the party, and the secretary has been part of that effort as well. Has that conflict affected the party significantly, or do you think not so much?
Not so much. And I will commend our vice chair, Lowell Nelson. I think that I think he's growing into the position. I think he is starting to get it. And although I don't agree with 100% of what he does, I have very little issue with him. However, the secretary, Drew Chamberlain, is just the opposite. And I think he's digging his heels in. I think he's all about himself and embarrassing the party and trying to bring attention to his pet issues. And I think that's sad, but he's the secretary, and I think he'll get voted out of office next year because of that.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Todd Weiler, a state senator who is running for election in Davis County, recently picked by GOP delegates to replace former Senator Dan Lilienquist. Our number is 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. We welcome your questions and comments on air. So as I mentioned, Todd, you were selected recently to join the Utah Senate, had your first legislative session a few months ago.
I did.
Was that a tough race, first of all, convincing the delegates on such short notice to pick you?
It was a tough race, and in several components. First of all, Dan Lilienquist resigned on December 15th. And so, I mean, how do you run a political campaign over Christmas and New Year's? That was number one. Number two, I had eight very good opponents, two of whom outspent me 10 to 1.
Wow.
And so I was very fortunate to come out of that convention, special election process.
What were your expectations going into this year's legislative session, and how did reality differ from your expectations?
Well, you know, I was appointed by Governor Herbert on January 13th, which was 10 days before the session started. So I thought, kind of like getting onto a roller coaster ride that you've never experienced, if I could just make it through without puking all over myself, I would consider it a success. And as it turned out, I think I did much better than that. So,
and how so? What do you mean?
Well, I was able to, I mean, with the assistance of the legislature, nobody does anything by themselves in the Utah legislature, but I was able to sponsor and pass eight bills, which was well above average. Wow. By any stroke of the imagination. And in fact, in Davis County, if you took all 13 legislators, I passed the second most bills. Now, several of my bills were actually striking laws, making government smaller. But I was very happy with those accomplishments.
So you were introduced to the political process up there, up at the legislature. What do you think in particular of the Senate Republicans' closed caucus meetings? This has been a source of debate. You certainly had Democrats who've wanted to open them for a long time, but it seems like there are more Republicans who are signing on to that as well. What are your thoughts there as a freshman senator?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I actually campaigned against the closed caucuses, and I was all prepared my first day up there to, when they voted to close the caucus, to vote against it and to, dig in my heels. They don't vote for that. It's a matter of procedure. It's been that way, I think, for decades, if not 100 years, and it's a choice of leadership, and I will be the first to admit, having now been through the process instead of being on the outsider looking in, I did at limited times see some value of a closed caucus. I know the Republicans in the House in the state have opened their caucuses recently,
right,
and I've been told universally that it's basically ruined the advantage of the caucus that the caucus had. So now we do start off every caucus in an open session, and then at a certain point, leadership says we're going to close it now, and they invite people to leave. So I think that and I think if I was in leadership right now, and I'm not running, I think I would like to keep it open longer and then decide if there's really a reason to close it. But we do start off every day with every caucus with an open part.
So, Todd, one of the most significant bills you sponsored during the session was SB 55. This relates to fathers' rights. Tell me about what this bill does and really what your goal was in sponsoring it.
Well, it's twofold. Number one, it was an adoption cleanup bill, and I'm an attorney by trade. I've been involved with between 50 and 100 adoptions. I've lost count. And so there's always cleanup bills at the legislature, fixing definitions so they're in harmony with other parts of the code, et cetera. But the significant portion of this bill actually, for the first time in Utah law, created a provision where an unmarried biological mother created a legal avenue for them to give notice to the putative father of the pregnancy and of a potential adoption, and then give him 30 days to exercise his rights. And so that's the carrot, because there's no notice provision right now. The stick is, if he sits on his hands for more than 30 days and doesn't file with the state, then he would lose his right to show up later and try to throw a monkey wrench into a legal proceeding for an adoption.
And you also sponsored SB 138. This is called Health Insurance Mandate Accountability. That sparked a lot of debate up there at the legislature and ultimately passed. What was this bill about?
Jeff, the biggest criticism I hear in politics is that Congress, the U.S. Congress, they pass laws and then they don't live by them. They opt themselves out. We have been doing that to a certain extent in the state of Utah with health insurance mandates, because we pass them, but as a state, we haven't been living by them. We've been basically imposing them on small businesses and then opting ourselves out. So the first thing that Senate Bill 138 did was it said, if we're going to pass a health insurance mandate, if it's so great we should impose it on small businesses, then we have to live by it as a state as well. So it extended them to all of our public education and higher education employees, school teachers, janitors, everyone in between, administrators. And so, and then the second thing it said was, if the health insurance mandate is going to increase the cost of the insurance premiums to public education, then we need to fund that so that the money doesn't come out of the classrooms, out of our, away from our children, or out of our teacher salaries or our teachers' pockets. So that's the two things the bill did.
This is Politics Up Close. We're speaking with State Senator Todd Weiler, a Republican of Davis County, running for election this year. Join us on the air, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Well, Todd, we've talked about what you've done already. What would you be looking to accomplish if you win a full four-year term to the legislature? What would be priority number one as you go into 2013?
Well, I have campaigned both back in December, January, and this election cycle on increasing accountability and transparency in state government. Mm-hmm. I think Senate Bill 138 was a step in that direction. I've had several constituents push me on ethics reform. Right now, we have 104 state legislators, and we have 30 registered lobbyists, 30, who are former state legislators, which I think is a high number. In 2010, we passed some ethics reform that would require a one-year cooling-off period between the revolving door of leaving the legislature and then starting lobbying. Of course, we've had a former Speaker of the House recently leave and start lobbying virtually the next day. About 12 years ago, my own state representative was accused of lobbying before she even left the legislature. I'd like to extend that one-year cooling-off period to 2 years, which would put us on par with the U.S. Senate, which I think is ultimately a corrupt organization. I say that in the sense of the influence of lobbyists and money on that organization. So if the U.S. Senate can have a two-year cooling-off period, and we're Utah, which I think our Utah values are probably different than the values of the U.S. Senate as taken as a whole, I hate to see them outperforming us in that cooling off period, if you know what I mean.
Well, there are legislators, sitting legislators, who are lobbyists as well, and it's always a contentious issue when someone brings up the idea of banning lawmakers from being lobbyists or vice versa. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think you're probably referring to my colleague, Senator Howard Stevenson.
Right.
I don't believe he registered as a lobbyist this year, and I think he was taking a lot of heat. I think that I'm not here today to defend Howard, but I think that he registered as a lobbyist to kind of go above and beyond the law. But I mean, he works for an organization called the Utah Taxpayers Association, which basically is saying, you know, let's have transparency in our taxes, let's have lower taxes. It's not like he's lobbying to get money for an organization or to get a special interest bill through to get millions of dollars. So I personally don't have a problem with what Howard's doing.
Let me ask you, Senator Wyler, about where you stood on one particular bill of this session, the one that probably was the most talked about this year, HB 363, the
Yes.
sex education bill, banning the teaching of anything but abstinence only in classrooms, or allowing school districts to say we're just not going to teach sex education altogether. How did you vote on that one?
I ultimately voted in favor of it, although my initial inclinations were to vote against it. The more I learned about it, and once I learned that it was going to pass both houses with or without my vote, I ultimately decided to vote for it. And I'd like to explain why. Mm-hmm. We've had a problem in Utah. Our Utah values are different than the rest of the world. I think most of your listeners understand that. And we've had a problem in Utah of trying to keep Planned Parenthood and their materials out of our classrooms. And as recently as 2 years ago, we had Planned Parenthood materials being used in Davis County, which I represent. By the way, I'll be representing 7 precincts in Salt Lake County if I'm reelected in the Rose Park, Capitol Hills area. So I'm mm-hmm. campaigning there now. There's 3 types of sex education. There's comprehensive, there's abstinence plus, and there's abstinence only. Planned Parenthood produces materials for comprehensive and abstinence plus, but not for abstinence only. And despite the legislature's best efforts over a number of years, the Planned Parenthood materials, which can link to websites with things like encouraging 10-year-olds to masturbate and encouraging teenagers to explore homosexual relations to find out if they're homosexual or not, which would absolutely not be acceptable in our Utah culture. The intent of House Bill 363, as I understood it, was to slam the door shut and lock the door to keep Planned Parenthood away from our children in the classrooms. And the only way to do that was to switch to a program, abstinence only, which Planned Parenthood did not produce materials for. And ultimately, that's why I voted for the bill.
Well, though, the argument on the opposite side is that local school districts, if they choose to use material, whether it be from Planned Parenthood or somewhere else, that's a local choice that locally elected school board members are making. What about that argument?
And there was some information that came out after the legislature about the 4 school districts that have on their own adopted abstinence only, and how their instances of sexual disease and their instances of pregnancy were lower than the school districts that had abstinence plus. I wish I'd had that information during the session. I will tell you this. I was not offended by Governor Herbert's veto, and I'm comfortable with the status quo because I think that the legislature sent a very strong message to the school districts that we will not tolerate those types of materials in the classroom. And if they continue to seep in, I think you'll see further action from the Utah legislature.
Finally, Todd, in the 90 seconds or so we have left, I want to say that your Twitter account, GOP Todd, has gotten you a lot of followers because of your frequently funny and, I would say, sarcastic posts about Utah politics. When did you first embrace social media, and do you find that it's something that's enhanced your political career? I should say you have a fake Todd Weiler on Twitter now.
Well, I don't have it, but I've attracted a fake account,
right, exactly.
which I actually think is hilarious. But and it was a sign that I'd finally arrived, that someone felt me worthy of having a fake account to mock me. But I think I got involved in social media in 2009, and I started doing it when I was vice chair of the Utah Republican Party. My first Twitter account was actually the Utah Republican Party's Twitter account, and then when I left that position, I started my own account, GOP Todd.
And do you find that it helps make friends in politics?
It does, and it helps make some enemies, too.
We've been speaking with State Senator Todd Weiler, a Republican running for election in Davis County, recently appointed to replace former State Senator Dan Lillienquist. Todd, we appreciate your time very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Politics Up Close, a production of KCBW News. Listen to the show every Friday morning at 9 and Sunday morning at 6, and download podcasts of our interviews online at kcbw.org. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.